Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
LAist Studios.
Today on the LA Report, we check in on a stretch of Highway 1 in Big Sur that keeps crumbling into the sea.
It's a beautiful place to go, but it's also a horrific place to build a road.
Also, we have last-minute tips to enjoy tomorrow's solar eclipse. And later, tsunamis pose a real threat to Southern California. We'll explain how even a small tsunami can be life-threatening and have a big economic impact. It's Sunday, April 6th. I'm Julia Paskin, and that's coming up on the weekend edition of the LA Report from LAist 89.3. But first, here's the latest news. Repairs are being done on a stretch of Highway 1 in Big Sur that was partially eroded during last weekend's rainstorm. It's one of several repairs to the scenic highway in recent years because the area's picturesque steep cliffs are also what makes it so prone to landslides. Marine geologist Dick Norris says that means the state will have to keep investing in Highway 1 repairs.
Big Sur Coast, we pay for it, basically, in the sense that it's a beautiful place to go, but it's also a horrific place to build a road.
Caltrans engineers are installing a traffic signal to direct traffic while they work on a permanent fix to the erosion. Monday will be the last time we see a solar eclipse in the U.S. for the next 20 years. LAist science reporter Jacob Margolis has this list of viewing events.
First, check your local public library, because those seem to be the spots for small gatherings, like in Sylmar and Studio City, where they're passing out glasses and making pinhole cameras to project the changing shadows. Then there's the party at Caltech, where you'll be able to look through solar telescopes and bug astrophysicists with all your awesome questions.
Sadly, the Mount Wilson get-together was canceled because of weather and road issues. For more viewing places, go to LAist.com. And with every big event comes the commemorative merchandise. So if you're looking for eclipse swag, LAist reporter McKenna Sievertson has these options.
T-shirts, mugs, posters, a playlist. The solar souvenirs are endless. To watch the eclipse, you'll need a pair of protective glasses. And Bill Nye and his science guy bow tie are featured on a pair from the Planetary Society. Drawing inspiration from its namesake, Sunships is celebrating with a special offering. But the pineapple habanero and black bean spicy Gouda flavor will only be available during the 4-minute and 27-second eclipse window. And after a long day of traveling for the totality, a spritz of the Soleil Noir perfume can remind you of the essence of these celestial events. I'm McKenna Sievertson.
Well, fun souvenirs aside, if you want to look directly at the eclipse, viewing glasses are a necessity. Mark Margolis is the president and owner of Rainbow Symphony, which has been making eclipse glasses for decades. He's also the father of LAist science reporter Jacob Margolis. Mark Margolis says they've sold more than 10 million pairs ahead of this celestial event.
Everybody is going to need a pair of glasses. We cannot make 350 million pair of glasses, but we've actually done quite well.
Margolis says safety is important, so keep an eye out for counterfeit glasses. Look for an ISO mark and the company's name on each pair. That way you know where to turn if there's any problems with the product. All the recent rainfall can cause more seasonal allergies. Jonathan Tam is an allergy specialist at Children's Hospital Los Angeles.
We are seeing a lot of allergy symptoms, runny, sneezy, and particularly itchy, watery eyes during the seasons where that pollen is sort of thick in the air.
Tam says rain can also break down pollen, making the allergens more potent. Plus, storm-induced humidity can lead to mold and dust mite growth, which can also trigger symptoms. Here's his advice for limiting your exposure this spring and summer.
As long as temperature permits, you know, keeping windows closed during those periods so that the pollens aren't coming into your bedroom and just depositing on your bed where you're breathing it in.
If you've tried different medications but still can't find relief, Tam says you may want to consider allergy testing, and that could pinpoint the issue. The 1970s Chicano movement in L.A. has been well documented. Chicano movement in Long Beach, not as much. A new photo exhibit seeks to change that. LAist correspondent Adolfo Guzman Lopez has more.
In the early 70s, Chicanos from Cal State Long Beach founded Centro de la Raza in East Long Beach. They provided summer school for youth, legal and housing assistance, and arts classes to further the goals of the civil rights movement. Ron Arias helped run the center.
At the pinnacle, the organization was close to $9 or $10 million, and it started as a $50,000 storefront.
The center's story has been nearly forgotten, but a first-time exhibit of photos taken by John Tabuada, one of the center's activists, captures his friends and colleagues at protests, teaching kids, and creating art. I'm Adolfo Guzman Lopez.
The exhibit is currently at the Historical Society of Long Beach. We have details at LAist.com. More after this break.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at nortonsimon.org.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
Back now to the LA Report, I'm Julia Paskin. Tsunamis pose a real threat to Southern California. They can be triggered by earthquakes, landslides, and other events near and far. And officials want us to be ready because even a small tsunami can be life-threatening and have a big economic impact. I spoke with Costas Sinalakis, professor of civil and environmental engineering at the University of Southern California and director of the USC Tsunami Research Center. He began explaining how tsunamis can really vary when they touch land here.
It really depends where the event comes from. Whether it's what we call a teletsunami, which means a tsunami that comes from really far away, like a tsunami that impacts us from Chile or Alaska or Japan, or whether it is a local tsunami. Local tsunamis are more threatening per se because they may penetrate further inland. And the maps that we have are good maps in the sense that they give an approximate line where people should evacuate to and of potentially flooded areas.
So it can really range depending on the event.
And this is where we hope the warning centers will come in. For tsunamis that come in from far away, we will have anywhere from 10 to 20 hours of warning because it takes that long for a tsunami to come in from Chile or from Alaska. But for a tsunami that happens locally, just offshore, we're only going to have minutes worth of warning, if at all.
Is it because of the proximity, or are those underwater land movements off the coast, are they also stronger?
Both. One is the proximity. The closer the source of the tsunami is, the smaller the propagation time, the less time it takes to strike the coast. The other part that we have is that, in your previous segment, you mentioned the Palos Verdes landslides. Not only landslides happen onshore in Palos Verdes, but they happen offshore. I mean, if you continue off Palos Verdes and you go close to what we call the continental shelf, there is evidence of landslides that have taken place 2,000-4,000 years ago. And those generated large tsunamis.
Can you give us some more examples of tsunamis that have hit our coast here in California and maybe more recent history?
If we talk, I mean, in the recent history, I mean, if we start going back from the 19, you know, from the 1946, which is the Aleutian tsunami, I mean, this is also, you know, the Aleutian starts from the Aleutian Islands in Alaska. This is an event that ushers, if you will, the modern era of tsunami warnings in the United States and around the world. The United States has been a leader in issuing tsunami warnings, but for the first 50 years or so, they were primarily focused to Hawaii. And then people started realizing that the Western coast also had a very high risk of tsunamis. So just going back from the last 50, 70 years, Southern California was hit by a tsunami from Chile in 1960, from Alaska in 1964. In fact, 1964, the tsunami hit also Northern California and in Crescent City. If memory serves me, about 20 people died. There was extensive damage in Crescent City. And then moving forward, again, when we started having these mega thrust earthquakes around the Pacific, in 2010, Santa California was hit, 2011 from the Japan tsunami, and then again in 2015 from the Chilean tsunami. In 2015, most of the impact was in Ventura Harbor. In 2010, most of the impact was in the Port of LA.
And how substantial was that impact for folks that, you know, they may say, what's a tsunami hit? I didn't know that happened. How substantial was that impact?
This is a very good question, and we really need to educate people about this. It so happened that the impact from these tsunamis was only concentrated inside the ports. And inside the ports, there were very, very strong currents. And, you know, some ships were out of control. It looked like as if we saw what happened with the accident in Baltimore, Maryland, where you had a ship just go a little bit out of here, out of control, and you see what the consequences were. Imagine inside the port, these giant ships going out of control because of the very strong tsunami currents. Because one of the things that we found out, both in 2010 and then in 2015, even small tsunamis of the order of less than a foot, hardly noticeable, you know, along the coastline, they can generate really strong currents inside the ports. And these currents can have catastrophic consequences, just like what happened in Baltimore. It's just that we were lucky. In 2010, and there was a warning, the operations in the Port of LA sat down. In 2015, there was impact in Ventura Harbor, but of course Ventura Harbor is much smaller. You don't really get this behemoth 1,000-foot-long ships moving around. But what really concerned me was in 2010, there is this movie taken from the Santa Monica Pier in Southern California, where you see the harbinger warning of a tsunami. You see the shoreline withdrawing, and it looks like a fast receding tide. So people are on the beach. Unfortunately, Santa Monica at the time had not evacuated the beaches. So people are sitting on the beach and they're watching this shoreline recession. They're watching this tide moving out, fast moving tide. Within 5 minutes, the tide moves out the order of about a quarter of a mile, which is very unusual. What do people do? They see this fast receding tide, and instead of heading for high ground, they just linger around, they go in, they try to see all the little critters that the fast receding tide has exposed on the seafloor, and they're just sitting there. And then, luckily, when the main wave of the tsunami came, it was very small, so people didn't get hurt. But we never know exactly for these tsunamis that are, you know, very far away, exactly what is the size of the wave that's going to strike the coastline, particularly when this wave is going to be less than, 2 feet. We're going to know if the wave that strikes is going to be 10, 20, 30 feet high. But when it comes out to these smaller waves, which are more common and which can affect people, you know, there we really do not have Our models cannot really differentiate and tell anyone with any degree of safety or, you know, that the tsunami is not going to flood the entire Santa Monica Beach or the entire Venice Beach any of the Southern California beaches.
I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about how to prepare. You mentioned the shoreline receding, that if you see that, do not go and investigate, move to high ground. What else should folks know, either as an indication or once they've realized that this is happening, what they should do?
Right. The other telltale indicator that there is a tsunami imminent is the an earthquake that lasts, earthquake shaking that lasts more than 15 seconds. The reason is that the bigger the earthquake, the longer the shaking. I mean, we should think of earthquakes and earthquake faults as being giant zippers. If you have a really long fault, like, for example, the San Andreas fault, and, you know, you get a magnitude 8 or 8.5 earthquake, the shaking will last likely from 3 to 3.5 minutes. It's going to be a lot of shaking. I mean, if you have a small earthquake at a magnitude less than 6, the shaking will last, you know, 1 or 2 seconds. So as a community, we set up say that if the shaking lasts more than 15 seconds, this means that this is you're experiencing a fairly strong local tremor, which if you're on the beach, you don't know where the tremor is. Is it inland? Is it offshore? So if you're on the beach and you experience earthquake shaking that lasts more than 15 seconds, this is the time to move to high ground. In practically every Southern California, every California beach, there are tsunami evacuation signs, and you just follow them and you just, move away from the beach. I mean, there's no need to move miles inland or to move to, up the mountains, but in most places, tsunami hazard zones are clearly marked. So all you need to do is just move out of the hazard zone and wait there for at least half an hour until you get an official notification that there is no hazard from a tsunami.
I was hoping you could tell us where we are in terms of our notification system when a tsunami comes and how listeners can get tapped into that.
Right. We're doing very well when it comes in to tsunamis that come in from what I said earlier, the teletsunamis that come in from different parts across the Pacific. We're not doing equally well when it comes to local tsunamis because of the time. I mean, it takes time for the warning centers to actually analyze the earthquake, make a determination whether it is the kind of earthquake that can generate a tsunami, and then issue a warning, and then this warning to trickle down and come to the people. What we need is, reverse 911. There was a nationwide test in the aftermath of the Maui fires. There was a nationwide test back in October. The wireless emergency alert system was tested on cell phones, and we hope this has never been tested in terms of a real tsunami, with a real tsunami. And we hope that the system is going to be ready, operational, and people will head the warnings in the unlikely event we get a tsunami in California.
That's Kostas Sinilakis, professor of civil and environmental engineering at the University of Southern California and director of the USC Tsunami Research Center. Thanks for listening to the weekend edition of the LA Report. The weekend LA Report is hosted by me, Julia Paskin, and produced by Monica Bushman and Kevin Tidmarsh. Our engineer is Sean Corey Campbell. The podcast is edited by Fiona Ng. Catherine Mailhouse is the director of content development, and our vice president of podcasts is Shana Naomi Crockmall. Join us back here tomorrow. You can read more at LAist.com and listen live on the LAist app or on the radio at 89.3 FM. Listeners like you help make the LA Report possible. Please donate at laist.com/join. This podcast is supported by Gordon and Donna Crawford, who believe quality journalism makes Southern California a better place to live.
LAist Studios operates within the homelands of the Gabrielino Tongva people, we recognize the painful history of displacement, settler colonialism, and erasure of the people, their language, and their sovereignty. Visit laist.com/land for more information. We encourage you to get curious about the land on which you live and work.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at laist.com/sweeps.